Sometimes we eat, other times we are eaten. One that eats us up is cancer, which we try to fight off by cutting, burning, and poisoning it. But there has been a breakthrough in fighting cancer, and today I'm going to ask the question of the day, which is, can our bodies be the cure for cancer?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,174th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Punta Arenas who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson for your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, most all of us know someone who was eaten up by cancer. As it did, we most likely stood by and watched helplessly as the doctors cut, burned, and poisoned away at the nasty beast, but in the end could only shed tears of helplessness. And that is the way it has been for as long as just about anybody can remember. But recently, there has been a breakthrough in the way we fight the cellular monster. Instead of cutting, burning, and poisoning it, we have been teaching our bodies how to fight it, how to become immune to it. I have watched this fight take place in a good friend of mine who was being eaten up by a particularly pernicious form of cancer. There was not much hope for her at all. But then she was given what they called an experimental therapy, in which they extracted blood from her body, sent it away to a distant lab where it was infused with some warrior cells, and then returned it to her body. Last week, she was playing on the beach in Hawaii. And by a recent discovery, I mean very recent. In fact, the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Emperor of Maladies, which was published in 2010, makes no mention of the field of immunology. And yet here we are, a few years later, teaching our bodies how to fight off the rogue cells and increasingly walking away from the ravenous monster. The story begins with the discovery of checkpoint inhibitors, which essentially are like the body's border guards. To tell that story, we have the man who wrote that story. And so we'll ask him our question of the day as well, which is, can our body be the cure for cancer? And here we have Charles Graber, who is the author of The Breakthrough, Immunology, and the Race to Cure Cancer. Charles, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, thanks for having me, Michael.
So good to have you. You know, as the author, being one myself, I always wonder how we go from one place to the other. You went from one very interesting place to another interesting place that was kind of totally different. You went from writing The Good Nurse, which is the story of the serial killer Charles Cullen, to writing The Breakthrough, which is the story of immunology and the race to cure cancer. Well, how did you make that leap?
Thank you for asking me that. I wondered that myself. The shortest answer is that they were the most interesting and important thing that I happened to have stumbled upon at the moment when I was thinking, what should I be doing with my time? In the case of The Good Nurse, I solicited it, but I happened to become the only person that the most prolific serial killer in American history would speak to. And as I spoke to him, I discovered that not only had he probably killed at least 400 patients, but that the hospitals knew about it and they kept passing him on place to place out their back door to avoid the liability. And knowing that, which was a remarkable story, I thought, well, other people need to know this too, and how do I tell it in a really interesting and journalistically responsible way? And that took me a really long time. Turns out there's a bigger serial killer in America, and that's cancer. It's not the reason I got involved, but that fact was pointed out to me at the end that it sort of runs similar. In that way, I had about 4.5 years ago come across some scientific research that told me that there were remarkable findings that nobody had ever guessed at before, that that cancer had always assumed was always assumed by science to be something that the immune system couldn't see, that when you have cancer, you don't have any of the symptoms that you associate with having a disease. You don't have even the cold. You know when you've got a cold.
You sneeze, you have, right?
You sneeze, and you have sniffles, and there are fevers, and things like that happen. You need a test, usually, to know whether you've got cancer. And as a result, most people assumed that meant that cancer and the immune system were never going to have anything to say to each other, and that wasn't ever going to be a way into the cure. And so no one, and people looked at it and they frankly made fun of those who even tried and thought otherwise. And it turns out that was dead wrong. And it is the most important and hopeful direction, and it's curing people every day. And so once I couldn't believe that was true. I thought I would have known about it. And it turns out I wasn't the only one that didn't know about it. And in fact, even all these years later, now that the book is finally out, and some of the people responsible just won the Nobel Prize for the discoveries that we're trying to capitalize on as we speak, people still don't know about it. A lot of patients don't know to ask for it. A lot of doctors, especially away from the big university centers, still think, especially if they're not brand new doctors, still think the way that they were trained, which is that this is bad science and not true. And as the Nobel Prize Committee and the FDA and everybody else will tell you, that's not the case. And people, cancer continues to kill people that might actually benefit a lot of them from these drugs that are no longer, some of them are experimental, some of them aren't, but it's moving so fast. You have to know to ask. So that's the reason for this book, Ed. That's what those two books have in common, a sort of urgency, to get that word out.
Well, let me ask you a very basic question. You probably will throw rocks at me for asking, but what exactly is cancer?
That's a great question. That's a wonderful question. It's exactly, so I'm not a doctor. I have some scientific training, and I've tackled science stuff before, and I approach this stuff the way I think you'd approach it if you start medical school or anything else, which is it's knowable and folks can understand it and I can understand it, and I try and translate. So you have to ask those sort of basic questions you have to ask. And cancer is us, which is what makes it so hard to fight. We've got an immune system, killer cells, warrior cells, recognizer cells, messenger cells, all this little specialized army that is really good, really, really good, developed over 500 million years to recognize what is not us, what is not self, what is foreign to the body and shouldn't be here, and killing it, getting it out of there. And it works for everything, except as we've discovered, it has a problem with cancer. Because part of what it's supposed to do is recognize, in order to recognize what's not us, it has to be able to recognize what is us. So cancer is us. And it's us that when the cells they reproduce themselves, they create one cell will create two daughter cells. We're constantly sort of shedding our leaves, if you will. We lose our own body weight in dead cells every year, which is, by the way, why there's so much dust in your house. I hate to tell you.
It's us laying around on the council, right?
Exactly right. Next time it's dusty, you know who to blame, and it's not just because you didn't dust it. But we have to replace it. That's how we stay healthy, and that's a critical that sort of that cellular spring cleaning is a really important part of our health. Cancer. But every time that happens, every time those cells happen, it's kind of a messy process, and mistakes get made, and usually those mistakes are they don't work. The cell doesn't work, and it gets cleaned out too as garbage. Sometimes it works, but it's really obviously not the right thing, and the immune system clears that out. These big garbage man cells of the body, like big Pac-Man cells, that come in and just eat it. They're literally called, you know, their name in Greek means big eater, and they just clear that out. That happens all the time. You're getting what you might think of as cancer every second, right now, all the time, and you're curing it and killing it all the time. The cancer we know about, the cancer that, you know, eventually kills us, is when that roll of the dice of mistakes that might be happening happens to come up with a version that works.
Okay, we've got to hold that. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about the big C. That's cancer. And do stay tuned. We'll be right back with Charles Graber. Ooh.
And now, back to What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
And so, when that roll of the dice comes up and the cell does not quite work, but our immune system doesn't recognize it as a foreign object, it sneaks across the border. That's about right.
I say dice because you can think of the roll of the dice. It reminds me in many ways more. You end up with a lot of metaphors, by the way, when you start talking about this stuff. A lot of them are the army. Sometimes they're Vegas, though. It's a lot like a very complicated slot machine, you know, with all the different, all the combinations. And the thing is, if you roll that slot machine often enough, if you keep spinning those dials often enough, even the most unlikely combination, eventually it's going to come up. And that's what happens with cancer. Eventually, some combination comes up that the cell doesn't do exactly what it's supposed to. It doesn't allow itself to fall away like an old leaf and be replaced. It wants to stick around, and it wants to reproduce and grow and not pass the baton to another cell, but get bigger and bigger. It wants to steal its own blood supply. It wants to spread.
It wants to eat us up.
It wants to eat us up. That is exactly right. And that's the cancer that does eat us up. And that's the one that we call cancer. So cancer is us as a mistake that works, which is what makes it so darn tricky.
And there it is. You know, Charles, having been in media for quite a while, for as long as I can remember, there's always been a promising new cure for cancer being announced on the nightly news, going back for as long as I can remember. And yet, none of them ever seem to pan out or work out as promised on the nightly news. Why is that?
That's a great question. And I thought about that long and hard when I called this book The Breakthrough. Because we see the breakthrough all the time. It's on the cover of Time magazine or the nightly news or whatever. It's somebody holding a test tube and some bright shining thing, and yet our loved ones keep dying from the same disease in the same way, and that, you know, that bright shiny future is always on the horizon, and the horizon never comes. So why is that? It's partially because sometimes, first of all, that word gets kicked around too often. And I even have in my chapter, there's a section about, you know, the story of immunotherapy. This isn't just one aha brilliant moment. People have been working on it for 100 years and failing. But they kept finding little pieces that told them, and maybe this is true, because, you know, we see it working in this person, but not these others. Is that magic, or is there something we don't understand? So you have these little glimpses and glimmers.
Hints. Promises.
Yeah. These hints and promises. But you know what? They weren't something you could reproduce.
There you go.
And so what you get is you get people understanding little things, and then they think, okay, and this little thing we just found, that's going to turn into, and then they create this whole science fiction version of how good it's going to be. And it turns out not to be that simple. This is a different sort of thing. And so that's why I felt very comfortable. In fact, I felt like I had to give the full story of these other failed breakthroughs, and how breakthrough can, it really break your heart is what it does, and breaks your spirit. A lot of people, they think, you know, oh, it's the field that cried wolf. I'm not even going to listen to it. This time we figured something out. We figured out that cancer has a secret handshake that it uses to tell the immune system that it's a normal cell, that you shouldn't be attacking me. I'm cool. I'm fine. I'm just like a, you know, like a developing fetus,
wow.
You know, which looks foreign.
So it's like kind of like a false passport, right? A forged passport. Here, look at this. Let me in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's there saying because and so it gets ignored. And what we figured out how to do is block the secret handshake. We figured out first of all that those secret handshakes exist. There's another metaphor here that because it's not all the same that we also figured out that cancer hits the brakes. That where our immune system, there's nothing more dangerous in your body than yourself. It's sort of like in this country or in any country that we've got a powerful army. Imagine if that army wasn't a disciplined group of patriots, but just ran roughshod and just did anything they wanted as a bunch of maniacs. They'd be incredibly dangerous, right? That's just a lot of armed people. That your army is your supposed to protect you. So we have that same protection in us, which is to say there's a lot of discipline, a lot of order, and a lot of safety checks to make sure that our warrior cells don't go attacking us. They don't go attacking the homeland, but they only attack the invader cells. And those are some breaks that are built into the T cells, into the warrior cells, there's a secret handshakes that are built in. Mm-hmm. The cancer that works, knows how to press those brakes. It knows how to use those secret handshakes. And what we've figured out is not only that those things exist, which is the real breakthrough, but that we can block them. And
wow.
Doing that, it's like you just turned on the lights, and suddenly, in the cases where you can, where that's what's happening, and we've only begun to pull back the sheets on how many of these secret handshakes there are, how many breaks. But when we block them, and it's just as easy as sticking a tiny thing in that little hand, if you will. It's a little
putting up a fence.
When you do it, it suddenly the light goes on. Cancer says, the immune system says, "Oh, I see. You're not supposed to be here." And it treats it like the common cold. So that's when you get those, people with stage 4 cancer that are on their way to the hospice end up on the way to the beach because it's night and day. When it works, it's a cure. And we're making that work for more and more people. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Before we go on in that direction of the very, very promising, we have been using techniques that we thought were promising, and they boil down to what you call cutting, burning, and poisoning them. And there seems to be a giant industry built up around those technologies. Are they just going to go away?
Yeah, that's a great question. Cut, burn, and poison. I mean, we've been cutting, since the age of Pharaoh. That's an old one. We've been burning with radiation ever since radiation was discovered. In fact, that same year. So ever since about 1901, we've been poisoning. Poisoning came, chemotherapy came about from research in the chemical warfare department. So these are techniques that we sort of, it's like a game of chicken, where you're trying to kill the disease before you kill the patient. And it's not ideal. It's just the best we had. A lot of those are going to be completely replaced by immunotherapy. Some of those are just not necessary. When immunotherapy works, when the current ones work, you don't need anything else. This is it. The immune system
It's done then. You've conquered cancer. So you don't need to cut, burn, and poison anymore.
No, you don't. There's one interesting, and there are two things about that. One is that there's going to be some resistance. It's not probably going to be from people that have any bad thoughts in their head about not wanting to cure cancer, not wanting to help people. But there are a lot of people that whose entire lives are built on doing things a certain way, and it's going to be hard to make some of those industries turn, and some of those people are just going to be plain old out of a out of a job.
Yeah,
so, and
then not only that, but there's been a tremendous amount of money over the years that have been focused on those technologies of cutting, burning, and poisoning. And a lot of money has been built up. And when there's that much money around this, that's a powerful lobby force that we have to contend with. So we're going to have to take a quick break. But when we get back with Charles Graber, I'd like to start with the checkpoint inhibitors and have him take us into this incredible new, it's new field, folks. It's almost 10 years old that we've really come to grips with the fact that we may be able to train our bodies to be the cure for cancer. Right back with Charles Graber and you. Stay tuned to the Food Chain radio program.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, of course, what's been eating us is cancer forever. Way back to the time of pharaohs, we've been trying to fight this pernicious disease, which is, as Charles Graber points out, is essentially us. It's our cells that have run amok on us. And since they are our cells, our immune system hasn't figured out how to cope with them. And so they run amok, and then we try to attack them, those rogue cells. But now there's a field of immunology that says we can train our own warrior cells, how to recognize them. All started with something we call checkpoint inhibitors. And when I heard that word, the first thing that popped into my mind is a border guard. Is that wrong, Charles?
Well, it's close to that. The word checkpoint brings that to my mind too. I think maybe a better way to think about the checkpoint, because the checkpoint we're talking about really, it's a checkpoint to a certain response by these warrior cells, right? You have the warrior cells. It's almost, you might think of it sort of like it's more like a checkpoint to a nuclear launch. So you've got these warrior cells that are around. They're ready. They're very good at recognizing things that aren't supposed to be in the body and activating. They can be trained, and they have memory. Vaccines basically are like wanted posters. They say they take a type of disease that's mushed up and dead and turn into a bunch of clues, if you will, about, you know, what that disease cell looks like, little pieces of the disease, and they say, here, this is what it looks like. You guys see anything that looks like this, be ready and attack it. And they create a whole army of themselves, just warrior cells that are specific to attacking the thing on that wanted poster, the thing that vaccine taught you about, or the thing that you've killed before, because that's like a vaccine. You've got all the fragments. Those army cells don't go around attacking everything, and that's where the checkpoints come in. So the first checkpoint, and I tell this story in my book, The Breakthrough, it was such a surprise, because the guy that found it and the guy that just won the Nobel Prize for it happens to be a hard-living, good-timing Texan who plays harmonica with Willie Nelson. He plays pretty good, too. Who, as I say, just won the Nobel Prize, brilliant guy. He was just trying to understand how all this stuff worked. And everyone was looking for a gas pedal on the T cells. Why aren't our warrior cells going? How do you make them activate? How do you get the army involved again?
How do you motivate the troops to get them going?
How do you motivate? Yeah, how do you motivate them, and how do you get them to recognize cancer? They figured there had to be maybe a gas pedal. Maybe it wasn't just you didn't need just the wanted poster. You needed to you needed to blow the bugle. You needed to do something to get this going. People were looking for that, and what we discovered was it wasn't that at all. It was that those warrior cells, those T cells, had built into them a bunch of safeties, like the sort of like the double, triple lock mechanisms on a nuclear launch sequence, or a series of safety steps to make sure that it didn't go off accidentally.
And attack us, right?
That's right. Attack the healthy cells, because you, people, we know what that looks like when, you know, people with Crohn's disease, turns out people with multiple sclerosis, all sorts of
autoimmune diseases.
All sorts of autoimmune diseases. And it turns out a lot of diseases that we didn't realize, like diabetes, have issues with the immune system. And what these breakthroughs, by the way, have ramifications for that too. But those checkpoint, the checkpoints, those are the checkpoints against the T cell going off, the T cell teeing off, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And once you discover that those checkpoints exist, and in fact the checkpoints is the name of Jim Allison's blues band, which is also, and the checkpoint he discovered is also the license plate on his racing car. Once you discover those checkpoints exist, the question is, can you prevent cancer from using them? And you stick a brick under the brake that cancer's trying to use. And the answer is, yeah, you can. And when you do that, when you inhibit their using them, that's a checkpoint inhibitor. And that's a whole – Jim Allison discovered the one, and that told people, okay.
There are others.
There are others, and his was a big one. His was almost literally like sticking a brick under the, sticking a brick under the brake, which, as you can imagine, the problem with that is, now you've got no brakes. So the side effects are pretty strong, and I mean, you know, you're willing to do it because it was that.
There's no other alternative, right?
Right, but we've found more discreet ones, ones that happen only as I was describing earlier, up close and personal. When, to use this metaphor, if the it's a soldier in the dark that has met a stranger in wartime and is trying to determine, is this friend or foe? And the cancer cell has a secret handshake that says friend, but in fact, of course, it's the foe. And that secret handshake, again, is used by healthy cells, normal body cells, so that we don't get attacked and don't attack ourselves. Cancer misuses it, abuses it, and abuses us. We've now figured out how to, and so that's another checkpoint, that secret handshake, and we've figured out how to block or inhibit those too. And when you do that, you're just sort of blocking the hand of cancer, if you will. Then it knows it's a foe, and boom, it's dead. And it, with these things, they describe them actually melting away.
What on earth tool do we use to do this discovering? How are we going about making these discoveries? Is it sequencing genes or something like that?
Yeah, I mean that's the part of the story of the breakthrough, part of the story of my book. My goal is for every reader. I don't care, you know, that one of the guys, my friend who's a landscaper, he hasn't studied any science at all. The math he needs is the math he uses every day. He doesn't interest in biology. He did have cancer, however, and he was wanting to know what the heck was going on. I wrote this book so you, from within the first couple pages, you'll get the big picture. You'll know what it is. You can talk to your doctor about it. You read the next 100 pages. It's supposed to read kind of like a thriller, except it's all true and it's all real patients. And you'll go through the experiences and be able to, again, ask those questions and not only what's available now, but what's right on the edge of being available. And so it gives you tools to talk to your doctor to understand what's happening with yourself. So part of that story is goes exactly to your great question, which is, how do we discover these things?
We're going to have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'd like you to take us through one of those patient discoveries that you do such a great job of laying out in your book, The Breakthrough. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Charles Graber and you. We're talking about the big C and asking, can our bodies be the cure for cancer? Right back.
What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it is quite a story. We are now on the verge of being able to train our body, educate our body on how to spot those rogue cells that become cancer. And we have the army of warrior cells to do the job, but how do we do it in a way that actually works without those warrior cells attacking our good cells? Wow, very complicated. And here to tell us that story, we have Charles Graber. Charles, take us through one of these cases that you do such a great job of illustrating in your book, The Breakthrough.
Well, one of the most interesting to me, and one of the most surprising to folks, is that this is all so new. The new drugs are, these are the things you're seeing in the Super Bowl ads. The ones that are around today, they're going to be new ones tomorrow. It's moving that fast. This is where all the research, all the money, all the science and all the hope is. And so that seems like it must not have existed at all 100 years ago. But the truth is, there was a version of this 100 years ago, and it worked. And that's one of the most incredible things. It got pushed out by chemotherapy, first by radiation, then chemotherapy. But it started, and I tell that story, it started with a pretty 16-year-old girl named Bessie Daschle, who thought she had a little bump on her hand. She was in New York City and went to a doctor, a real young doctor named William Coley, fresh out of medical school, full of hope, hope in medicine at a time when, you know, Edison's around the corner trying to make one of the first power plants, and there are people discovering new continents and there's a great sense that, anything's possible. And this girl comes in, and that bump on her hand gets worse and worse. He tries to treat it, and he's a trained surgeon, and it ends up being a cancer of her bone, and he has to do what they know how to do, which is cut. And they begin to amputate, and over the next weeks and months, they amputate more and more, and this and the cancer spreads, and he can do nothing about it. He's incredibly frustrated. And this beautiful, young, hopeful girl, one of his first patients, someone he identified with himself personally, she ends up as a wreck who, living on opium and alcohol, disfigured, and completely destroyed and ultimately dies by the disease. And being a young doctor at that time, he thought, well, this surely doesn't have to be this way. And he went and looked through the big books that the hospital kept. They were all longhand, leather-bound books at that point. But everyone ever walked in and walked out of the hospital there. And he, digging back far enough, he found a guy that had come in. He was an Italian immigrant, a German immigrant, this fellow, named Fred Stein. He'd come in with this big bulging tumor on his neck, and it didn't look good. They tried to operate on him and take it off. They couldn't operate enough. They couldn't close it. They couldn't finish the surgery. It became infected. He had a fever and infection in the hospital in those days. That's usually the end of you. That's what killed more people than war. But a funny thing happened. When instead of dying from either his cancer or from that infection, somehow the infection and the cancer got together. It's like the infection woke up his immune system, and the big tumor melted away down his neck. He was better, and he walked out of the hospital, never to be seen again. And Coley thought, well, let's do more of that. How do we do that? So he went searching through the immigrant slums of the Lower East Side, New York, just knocking on doors and crawling around trying to find this guy, because he just walked out the door one day, it didn't have an address, there's no internet, there's no phone, even a phone book, and he found him. He brought him back to the hospital and got a translator and to talk to the surgeon, and they confirmed, yep, it's the same guy. And they said, okay, well, if it's possible with one, what happened with him that maybe we could reproduce? And this fellow Coley, what he ends up doing, a series of experiments you can never do today, and it's a real adventure story in the book. because he ends up, it's almost like a Dr. Frankenstein thing, but it's real and it works. He ended up making a series of basically poisons, the stuff that infected the wound, these bacteria that would make you ill and give you these fever and so forth. He made a formulation of these called Coley's toxins that he would administer to patients. He'd inject it with them, and they'd get high fevers. And he killed some of his patients when he was trying to figure out the right how to do this. And it didn't all work. And the numbers he kept were, it's hard to translate them exactly to the way we keep records today. But it was sort of a mad scientist stuff, although he was a very celebrated doctor. But he had better cure rates than anything we'd seen for really, really since. And Coley's toxins were a patented medicine. They weren't just snake oil. They were made by Bayer. They were manufactured in Canada and in Germany until very recently, manufactured at the Mayo Clinic. That was the treatment for cancer. And the problem with it was no one understood how it worked, because the immune system that it woke up hadn't really even been discovered yet. They didn't know what this stuff did. They thought maybe the bacteria killed it. The exact formulation, how you make toxins, how you make a bunch of bacteria in the right combination, and how you administer them, some country doctors around the world, how that was going to translate.
Wow.
It was really hard.
And yet it was a brand new technology that we're just bringing back today in form of immune technologies. And
yeah.
Where is this going to take us? That's what we're going to ask Charles Graber when we get back from this break. Do stay tuned. We will be right back on The Food Chain. Where are we in this new world of immunology that's very old, I guess? Charles?
Well, it's, we were just talking about William Coley, who died in disgrace and in poverty with his ideas completely laughed at. And they were laughed at for 100 years afterwards, as people thought, that radiation was more scientific, that chemotherapy was more scientific, that the other one just seemed too wacky. But there were a handful of true believers. And as you say, it's really only been in the last 10 years that it's come around. These new drugs are only within the last year, really.
This is sparkling, fresh, brand spanking new stuff.
I'll tell you what, we have a handful of drugs right now. I mean, the ones that are really the big ones, they're only really three or four. I say drugs, but, they're the molecules we've discovered that block this. In the pipeline, coming at us right now, we have what the researchers I talk to refer to as a tsunami of new compounds. They've identified we've got three or four targets that we're able to successfully hit those checkpoints, those secret handshakes, those breaks. There are over 3,500 right now that they have just identified within the last period of about a year. There are about that many new drugs in the pipeline within that last year. There are over a million patients in clinical trials testing these combinations, these drugs and combinations, and together right now. That's how it used to be. Clinical trials were these Hail Mary things where it probably didn't work. This is where all the good stuff is now.
And it's new and it's real. And how?
It's real, yeah.
How does the other side of the treatment, spectrum work? Look at this new stuff. Like I said, you've got billions of dollars that have been invested in the cutting and the burning and the poisoning.
Yes. There's a lot to learn. It's amazing. I'm hearing this book is brand new too. The breakthrough just came out, and I always assumed. I always assumed doctors knew everything. I assumed doctors talked to other doctors and everybody knew the newest thing. People really know their specialties if they know that, and certainly don't know what's come up. So a lot of doctors don't even know about this really, which has been fascinating to hear. And they're telling me how much they're learning and they know to look at. It's not just patients, but part of the reaction. There's always a defensiveness, and I talked about this in the book. How there was resistance but to these new ideas or these old ideas that had been laughed at for so long and how people had to overcome that. And it was really only these Nobel Prize winning developments that allowed them to to make that turn.
That was a huge breakthrough as well, getting a Nobel Prize for immunology, right?
Yeah, that was. I mean, that's really the moment. This book had taken me some 4.5 years, and just as I was, and when I first proposed it to my publisher, he had the same reaction to most publishers. Most publishers didn't have interest in it because they said, well, that couldn't possibly be true because I would have heard about it. And they felt pretty silly when, just as I was finishing the book, the guy I'd been interviewing, and I tell his stories all throughout it, was handed the Nobel Prize in medicine for developments that the Nobel Committee themselves called a breakthrough in human health. So this is a really thrilling moment. You have to be careful because it's not done. But it's starting to. And, you know, one of the interesting things about, you asked about those other treatments, things like chemotherapy and cut, poison, and burn. One of the things that all those, those specialists understand, and we all now understand because of the breakthrough, is that it was always the immune system. The immune system is always involved. If you beat cancer, it's always because you beat it back, you poison it with this other stuff, you exploded enough of those cancer cells to turn them into almost like a vaccine. You turn them into wanted posters for the rest of the immune system,
always the immune system. Charles Graber, author of The Breakthrough, Immunology and the Race to Cure Cancer, thank you for a wonderful story and for the work you've done for all of us. Thank you.
Well, Michael, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.